Hello, and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. I'm Austin, and I'm joined here with Charlie.
Hey, what's up? Hello.
And we have recently had some things going down in China with censorship specifically, and we wanted to talk a bit about that. It's particularly relevant to us being in China.
Yeah, you know, censorship is such an everyday affair in China. We're kind of coming out of a particularly strong censorship period
right.
due to the historical events which happened 30 years ago, which people in China tend to not want to mention. As the Simpsons parodied in 1989, nothing happened here.
I'm not familiar with that episode. I mean, I've probably seen it, but...
Oh, you're not? The Simpsons go to Beijing, and they're standing in Tiananmen Square, and there's a monument which says, in June of 1989, nothing happened here.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so there's a lot of censorship right now. However, this particular case of censorship is one of the craziest examples of censorship that I've ever heard of in my entire time in China. It's really funny. It's really wacky. It's a good example of reality being stranger than fiction.
Right, right. Yeah.
So what we're talking about specifically is Tencent and the way in which they've finagled PUBG into a game which has passed Chinese censors.
Right.
And this is a topic, kind of our third podcast on this subject, really. In August of 2018, almost a year ago, we recorded a podcast titled What's Ailing China's Game Industry?
Yeah.
And we talked about the regulatory freeze in China, which had crippled China's game industry for a long time. Still kind of crippled, arguably. And then after that, we recorded another podcast on Battle Royale games where we talked about PUBG.
Yeah.
And now PUBG has transitioned, kind of like League of Legends, into sort of a Chinese game.
Right. Primarily owned by Tencent. It's now we've seen what's happened with the game. I would say it pretty much is, for all intents and purposes, at least as the mobile version goes, strictly a Chinese game.
The mobile version has cannibalized the desktop version of PUBG,
right.
The console versions of PUBG. It's available on PS4 and Xbox One now. Didn't really take off, and the Battle Royale, you know, entry of PUBG was kind of passed by other games, first by Call of Duty, Blackout, and then by Fortnite,
right.
I mean, which was the big hit. And
Apex
most recently, that's become a big hit, and we talked about that on a previous podcast as well. But for PUBG, there are still 70 million active players inside China, according to multiple sources, and these active players have generated something like $1.1 to $1.5 billion a year in annual in-app purchases.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so it's been really big. It's been a very lucrative thing. And PUBG, I think until recently, was a game that you would see a lot of people playing in China, like in everyday life.
Yeah, just like at a coffee shop or, you know, just waiting in a waiting room at the doctor's office or pretty much anywhere you went, you would see people playing it
on
their phones.
Right beneath where we're recording this, there's a little street side bar. And I would always see people lined up there, like four or five people in a line, all of them playing PUBG together. Yeah, and they would just get a pint of beer and pull out their phones and play PUBG together and just chain smoke cigarettes for hours hang out there.
It's kind of a cool phenomenon, you know, and I think it's interesting to see that happen.
Yeah, I also noticed recently, a couple months ago, I was in Thailand and Vietnam, and I saw a couple of internet bars which were filled with people playing games. And that's a much less common sight than you see in China. You know, you see a lot of those in China. And I went inside a couple of them, and both of the ones which I went inside were almost entirely dominated by people playing PUBG on desktop. And this was like February 2019.
Right.
So I was a little bit surprised by that. You know, I'm like, oh, wow, you guys are still
old news.
Yeah, so it's like the 2017 smash hit. Here we are in like almost spring 2019.
Yeah.
But it's still a popular game in Asia, especially in China.
Right.
So the way that we come upon this story, though, is that there's been a new development in PUBG. The situation, for anybody who's not aware, is that PUBG Mobile has been available for a long time inside China.
But 2 years now?
That Three? Sounds about probably less than 2 years.
Yeah.
It's got to be less than 2 years. But Tencent had always lacked the license to monetize the game.
Right.
So it's been available, but there have been no in-app purchases, which has been such a crazy situation because Tencent navigated the situation so strategically, so tactically to, you know, strike this deal with Bluehole to make a major investment in the company, which is the South Korean developer of PUBG. And then they got rights to the game in China. The game was a massive hit. It seemed like Tencent was perfectly positioned to just continue to dominate. Yeah. You know, I mean, they always are the dominator in China, but to continue to dominate. And then it turns out that central regulators are not going to grant them a license.
Right. So I think we've touched upon this before in previous podcasts, but it's specifically the what is it, the SART?
Yes, that's right. It's like SARFT or something like that. The administrative
board. Administration of Radio and Television. And they, like, you know, you have to go through them to get the license, right. I guess, for your game to be released in China.
Yeah, so they were...
They're also who put the ban on games or whatever, the freeze on releasing games for, what, 18 months or something?
I don't think it was that long, but it was, I think, close to a year where they didn't approve any new games. But there was sort of a bureaucratic shift where there were new people who were in charge of this regulatory board. And apparently, this only rumors and conjecture about what actually happened on the inside. But the theory is that no one wanted to take a risk and stick their neck out by approving any game.
Right.
So they were just very careful about not approving anything, because who can criticize that? I mean, yeah. Meanwhile, some of China's and some of the world's most valuable companies like Tencent took a massive loss in market value.
And for sure, you know, smaller companies probably got forced out of business during that time.
For sure. Tons of companies went bankrupt, especially small and medium-sized developers, publishers in China. I mean, imagine you're like an indie developer in China. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, regulatory freeze, can't release any game in China.
You can't really afford to hemorrhage money away like that, you know, for extended periods of time.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, Tencent could, you know, withstand a blow like that. Not that they're going to be content about it, but they can deal with it, you know. But a small company doesn't have the assets to deal with something like that.
Yeah, and most small companies haven't been releasing games outside China. I mean,
right.
You know, mainland China companies. A lot of them can't speak English. They don't know how markets outside China work.
Nor do those games appeal, I think, to many Western gamers. The majority of them won't.
Sure. Generally speaking, yeah. I mean, crossing that cultural gap is a major undertaking, and the vast majority of Chinese developers are unable to do that, which is why Tencent and NetEase have shifted strategies over the last couple of years from developing games for markets abroad into just investing in already successful, popular game developers abroad, and then just riding those investments and following their guidance. This is what we saw with Fortnite, PUBG, I mean, all the most popular games, League of Legends. Tencent acquired Riot, which is the developer of League of Legends. So Epic Games, I think Tencent owns 40% of Epic Games.
Don't they have stake? Doesn't Tencent have stake in Supercell?
Yeah, I think they have a majority position, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Definitely a huge investment in Supercell. And
Supercell's one of the giants in the mobile industry.
Definitely one of the giants, creators of Clash of Clans, Clash Royale.
Yeah.
I mean, just a whole string of massive hits. Although I don't think there's been like a massive Supercell hit recently.
I've been playing a game recently, their most recent game, Brawl Stars, but I don't think it's been a huge hit or anything. It's a fun game. But
yeah, that is a popular game.
It's not a...
Not a new release either.
It's not new? I mean, it's like their newest though, right? Within the last year, maybe?
That's a good question. I kind of feel like it's more than a year old, but in any case, Supercell is one of the biggest mobile developers in the world. So, and that's another Tencent acquisition.
Right.
So this game in particular, which we're talking about, is Game of Peace.
Right. Which I kept calling Guns for Peace.
Well, you weren't that far off.
I mean, I think it's applicable in the situation.
Well, yeah, let's see. So, I mean, the game, I would say Game for Peace is a slightly less ridiculous title than Guns for Peace.
Right.
You know, I mean, Guns for Peace on its surface sounds like a slogan from George Orwell's 1984.
Yeah.
It sounds like war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength.
Right.
Which are three of the slogans which are in 1984. And it's basically this idea of hypocrisy right in your face in order to break down everything which you think you know and to challenge sort of fundamental truths of society and of the individual.
Right.
And there's just so much weird stuff going on with this development.
Yeah.
So for anyone who hasn't heard, essentially PUBG has been removed from China.
Completely out of the App Store.
Yeah. And it's been replaced with another game, which is a modified version of PUBG, which is almost identical.
It looks almost exactly the same. There's a few graphical changes. I think that they're using the like Chinese fighter jets now instead of helicopters or whatever. Sure. Things to make it, you know, more patriotic. Go China.
The patriotism is over the top.
But I think one of the biggest changes is that, you know, when you kill some, or now you technically can't kill someone. When you shoot someone enough, they get down and just wave goodbye to you. Like, hey, bro, thanks. You know, that was fun game for peace. I'm out of here. See you in the lobby.
That is the thing which most people are talking about. So you play the game as normal. I can't imagine anyone does not know how PUBG works who's listening to this, but the game involves 100 different people, players, who are airdropped onto an island, and they collect items and weapons, and they have to kill each other to emerge as the sole survivor, which results in a win, which winner, winner, chicken dinner is the slogan, which has been popularized through PUBG. And now
it's been changed now, right? Now it's not winner, winner, chicken dinner. I think they changed the slogan of the game.
Do you know what they changed it to?
I'm not sure because I can't read Chinese. So,
so in any case, the game is functionally equivalent. You are still one player. You're still airdropped in.
I think ZZ told me what it said when I won.
ZZ Top?
ZZ Top. Yeah. she mentioned I was using her phone to play it. I couldn't get it set up on my phone because I have a U.S. account on mine. It's not in the U.S. store yet. And when I won, it just said, congratulations, you won the game of peace or whatever.
The game's never going to be in markets outside China.
Right. So it's just,
you know, yeah. So yeah, there's no waiting for that. I mean, this is like a purely for China regulators situation.
And all of the people who were playing PUBG in China can carry over all of their progress from PUBG, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's crucial. So it was just very recently that this development happened. It was May 2019, Tencent announced that it would no longer seek to publish PUBG Mobile in China, but it would instead ship a similar battle royale game titled Game for Peace, which would meet China's content restrictions, such as eliminating blood and gore.
Right.
Which is so funny to see because you pick up guns, the same guns, you pick up bullets, the same bullets, you fire the guns, you hear the rattle of the guns. It's exactly the same, except now there's no blood, which comes out. And when players die, their body doesn't fall down as a dead body does. They fall down to their knees and then wave a white flag and then they disappear.
They don't wave a white flag. They just wave at you like, bye.
You know, it's not even something that you notice, like as you play the game.
I mean, had to look closely just to even pick up on it. And I had only heard about it. So I was specifically playing, looking for that key detail. But if you don't know about it, you might not ever notice it.
Yeah. I mean, you're shooting and then it pops up and says a player has been eliminated in Chinese. It doesn't say killed, whatever, tiny semantic difference.
Yeah.
And they're just gone. I mean, it's not like in PUBG you were ever like looking at their body, really. You know what I mean? You're just looking to defend yourself. You're just searching doorways, searching the horizon, looking for opponents.
Well, maybe you're not looking at their body.
Well, I played it myself, and I looked at videos of it online. And, I mean, looking at videos online, or even yourself, I mean, if you're specifically looking for it, you'll see it. But it's such a small detail, you know? And the fact that there's no blood and gore, I mean, it doesn't really change anything in the game.
It doesn't change the gameplay.
But there was not a lot of blood and gore to begin with.
Some games that would drastically affect, such as Mortal Kombat, or, you know, many games, I think it would drastically affect the impact of.
Come on, we're not
talking
about Mortal Kombat. Right, That's a totally different case. Yeah. And the developers also added a conspicuous dose of patriotism to the design, which is certainly pandering to the regulatory bodies. It includes a lot of nationalist slogans, the same ones you see in China, you know, like national defense, like pro-communist party, red banners, white text, exactly the same kind of thing that you see commonly in mainland China. There's also a lot of Chinese Air Force recruitment ads inside the game. All the aircraft are all Chinese aircraft, from getting airdropped at the beginning to when you win. I haven't won, but I've seen online that there's like jet fighters like flying together. And
it kind of reminds me of, you remember America's Army?
Yeah.
Yeah, just like the just go Army, go, you know, feel free to join us. You know, here's the information. just the pandering to the, you know, Chinese military that they've now put into the game.
Yeah, America's Army was funded, I think, by the like Department of Defense or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was essentially a recruitment initiative, which is kind of an interesting example. But yeah, so I mean, to take something so popular and just twist it into this sort of pro, you know, pro-China patriotic like sort of monstrosity, you know. I mean, it's kind of
bizarre.
A really bizarre it's so bizarre. I mean, it's a bit of a monstrosity. I mean, to witness it is really something. The people who are listening to this, if you don't have the means to play it, then definitely go on YouTube and just search for Game of Peace. Game for Peace, and you'll see videos of it. And I think upon looking at it at first, you might think that, you know, hey, the only thing that's different is just some pretty small details. You know, it's kind of interesting that China can bypass these sort of content restrictions. I mean, basically so easily, you know, pretty much with the same game. And when PUBG first came out in China, there were similar concerns about, can the game come out here? Because first it wasn't available in China at all. And people were just using a VPN or, an accelerator like we were using to connect to servers outside of China to play the game. And that was maybe, you know, when PUBG, the desktop form at least, was most popular here.
Yeah.
And at that time, people were saying, well, maybe the game won't get approved. It will never come out in China. And I think China came out officially and said that it violated some socialist principles.
Right. I think they started altering the blood color the game, just hoping that that would have a change. But I think during that time, the SART or whatever, or one of those governing bodies kind of cracked down and just said no blood, no, you know, none of this stuff. So... hence, you know, here we are with a game with no blood, no deaths.
Well, there was conjecture about what they would do to get the game past regulators.
Right.
And I think we were kind of, it was a tongue-in-cheek sort of notion that, like, oh, well, they'll just add waving Chinese flags. They'll add propaganda posters, and they'll add Chinese jet fighters. And all that stuff actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, some of the tongue-in-cheek suggestions actually turned into reality, which... makes it kind of difficult but interesting to, you know, prophesize about what's coming next in the Chinese game industry.
I mean, one thing to take note of is these things that Bluehole or Tencent, or I guess it's Tencent working on the mobile version doing this, right?
Right.
So it's not, you know, as if the... you know, the governing bodies are saying you have to have these things in it and it must be designed like this. We don't know necessarily how much of this, before they even submitted it for approval or anything, was just the developers choosing to, you know, think that this would accelerate the process and going over the top just to gain approval to do so.
No one knows. No one can know. Tencent stock value went up pretty sharply as soon as this was announced. And I think currently it's the most downloaded free game and the top grossing game on China's App Store for iOS. So the question, I guess, is will making sanitized patriotic versions of ordinarily violent games be the only way for developers in China to generate revenue? And I think the answer to that is maybe yes.
Maybe. And one of the concerns, though, I think, is that, I mean, we look at the movie industry and how China's, you know, kind of been influencing the movie industry, you know, with product placement, you know, how movies are being made and stuff, at least big, you know, blockbuster Hollywood movies. And this could potentially have an impact as, you know, larger companies invest in more foreign companies as to how games are developed just to gain approval in China.
Well, maybe they'll take other popular games and just shoehorn them into a patriotic mess like this game.
Well, I mean, do you think that we have multiple, you know, ways this could go down? There could be censored versions released specifically for China, or we could see the game as a whole be altered and see a universal release of that, just and have it be toned down specifically to allow for it to see a universal release as opposed to having different versions of the game.
I wonder what kind of absurd scenarios could we theorize which, looking back on this podcast, will be seen as truly absurd. I mean, maybe there's a version of Apex, which is all, you know, pro-communist.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a version of Mortal Kombat where every fighter is like a communist general from the 1970s. I mean, is there any absurd situation which we can forecast, which will be seen as truly absurd? Because, I mean, with this, like, we are firmly in absurd territory now.
Yeah.
So it's hard to see anything as just laughably absurd at this point. And Tencent really kind of did the right thing here too. You know, I mean, it's hard to really, yeah, I mean, although it's absurd, well, sure, that's all that matters, yeah. Right? I mean, because they're a business.
Well, and not for us as the consumers. We may not be content with where this kind of censorship could take games.
Well, sure. I mean, well, what we want and what Tencent wants are not aligned. You know, right. I mean, first of all, like, we're foreigners in China. We're not representative of the average Chinese person. And, you know, secondly, Tencent's going to do what's in Tencent's interest,
correct,
you know, not what's in the gaming industry's interest.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, at least they're making money off this now, right? I don't know. I mean, it's
good for them there.
Looking for a silver lining here, you know, but I mean, obviously the stock value has gone up. People feel encouraged by the fact that Tencent is back on the track of monetizing games. And although it's, you know, a cartoonishly preposterous game, it is making money and it is very popular. And so it's hard to see that Tencent didn't do the right thing here.
Hmm. Yeah. But it's still hard to say, you know, whether or not that'll be a positive direction for the games industry. I mean, financially, yeah, they need to make money for sure.
Well, at least it's a direction.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is a direction.
Yeah, as opposed to just being halted for so long.
Or just providing a game with hundreds of millions of players, which you aren't making money on. I mean, why would Tencent...
That's kind of like worthless.
Sure, yeah. Why would Tencent want to continue doing that? Also, as soon as they launched Game for Peace, it made over $15 million in 72 hours. So at an average of $4.7 million a day, that pans out to something like $1.5 billion a year.
It's crazy.
So yeah, that's a lot of money. And... you know, who knows? The game probably experienced a big spike at the beginning, but I mean, the success of the game could be sustained. You know, it's hard to discount it entirely. Yeah. But I mean, if it's doing over $1 billion a year, then that's very good business for Tencent.
That is. I mean, the businesses need to keep making money for sure. So, I mean, that's a positive improvement. And, you know, games are going to be continued to release here. That's a positive improvement for the industry here. And, you know, I think at least now at this point with the, you know, the process for approval not being frozen anymore, at least indie companies can, you know, put things out there at this point. So
it'll be interesting to see if they can, because the number of games that have been approved, it's just a trickle.
So small.
It's such a small number.
Do you know how many?
Yeah, the list of games which were approved, I saw the document along with Game for Peace, something like a few dozen games.
Hmm.
So out of a market with, you know, over a billion people in it, it's just not that many games. The floodgates are definitely not open. I mean, if there were no restrictions, you know, we would be seeing thousands of games being released every week, you know? I mean, not dozens, right?
Yeah.
So we're still looking at, you know, pretty substantial restrictions. And presumably a lot of the games which are approved are, you know, not that dissimilar from Game for Peace, you know?
Mm.
I mean, maybe they're not all like patriotic wank fests, but, you know, a lot of them have cut out anything which is perceived to be offensive or, you know, uncouth as to the standards of China, which that's a high bar.
Yeah. Well, specifically just to touch on the things that the, I mean, we don't know everything, but specifically the things that you can't have in games are violating basic principles of the Constitution, threatening national unity, sovereignty, and territorial integrity. That would involve things with, like, Taiwan and stuff.
Yeah, you can't even have English in your game at all.
Yeah, you can't have English. I know that in PUBG, even if they if you try to type the word Taiwan, it blocks that out.
Does it really?
Yeah, it automatically blocks it out in all versions of the game, supposedly, now.
I wonder why they're so sensitive about that, considering their belief is that Taiwan is a territory of China.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, why shy away from that? I don't quite understand.
I don't know. You also can't divulge state secrets. That makes sense, I guess. You know, damaging the nation's glory, disturbing social order, orger and infringing on others' legitimate rights. So, like, a lot of it just has to do specifically with, you know, like, nationalism and about, like, you know, just go China, go. So, you know, I mean, we are probably going to continue to see more and more games like this, especially, you know, with companies, you know, scrambling to start making a profit. You know, they will want to, you know, take the fast track to do that. And even if they aren't specifically saying you should make patriotic games, we probably will see more games just doing that, since it's working out for PUBG, which is now Game for Peace in China. You know, we'll see more games continue to do that.
Yeah. Have you been playing any Chinese games on your phone at all? Do you have, like, the Chinese app store set up on your phone?
I did before, but I don't have it set up anymore. I'm primarily playing just foreign games. And you know I don't play a ton of mobile games, so yeah.
Yeah, I found with Android, it's just so much easier to get Chinese games working.
Right, because you can just put the APK on there from, like, wherever, right?
Yeah, so. But normally you wouldn't do that. Because, I mean, you can just download APKs directly from websites. I find that's, like, not very safe way to do it, though, yeah. Because you don't really know, like, what they're doing, even though you do have, you know, control over the access that they get. But there are so many different app stores in China for Android in particular. Obviously, if you're on iOS or an iPhone, then you're just dealing with the iOS app store.
Right.
And juggling multiple app store accounts on an iPhone is a bit cumbersome because you got to, like, log out, log back in into different accounts.
It's a pain.
It's a bit of a pain, yeah. But on Android, I use Wandojia, which is a app store which is popular in China.
And you can just download an app for the app store, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, using that, you can just download whatever you want. You can also quickly see, like, what's popular and just get access to whatever you need. So this has made it a bit easier for me to check out games like this and other games which are popular in China. So if you're listening to this and you're an Android user and you're interested in checking out some Chinese apps, that is the app which I would recommend. And I can link to that in the
description.
App store notes. Yeah. And then podcast notes.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't really been playing any Chinese games. I don't find them too appealing to me. A lot of them are just, like, grindfest RPGs or things like that.
There are some really good Chinese games for sure. But they're pretty quirky. They're pretty weird. I mean, the palette of the Chinese gamer versus the Western, say, American gamer is pretty different. But I mean, if you're learning Chinese, it's a great way to do that.
For sure. For sure. What do you think it is that generates such a different taste in games, though?
That's a good question. There's so much involved. I don't know. There's not just one answer or even, like, a short bullet point list of answers, I think. But China has been kind of closed, you know, from the rest of the world for, like, such a long time in so many ways culturally.
I mean, there was the ban on consoles and games in general for so long here as well, having it be a gray market, you know, thing to be seeking out. So
yeah, just the culture of China is just very different from even other places in Asia. I mean, if you travel in, like, Hong Kong or Taiwan or you know, Thailand or Vietnam or Cambodia or Mongolia, like, these are all very different places to China culturally.
Right.
So China is kind of culturally very distinct and unique. So I guess it makes sense that the games market also reflects that unique taste. But you see a similar thing in Japan and Korea as well. Like, in those markets, they're heavily regionalized. So the games which are really popular in the United States are not the same as the ones which are really popular in Korea or Japan or China. So you kind of have to think of them all as sort of discrete markets, which have their own unique characteristics. And usually when you have a hit game in one of these markets, it's not going to be a hit game in the other markets.
Correct.
And so PUBG is, like, a really unique situation where, I mean, when we were playing PUBG on desktop, that was, like, that game was popular everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, in Europe, the United States, in China, elsewhere in Asia. And that was, like, a very rare situation.
Yeah. You know, that was a phenomenon that you hadn't seen before and haven't really seen since either.
Well, one thing which we saw all around the world in terms of popularity, excluding China, was, like, Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
When that was really big, I think it was the summer of 2016. That game was everywhere, from United States, Canada, Europe, you know, Australia, Japan, and no one in China ever got access to it.
Ever.
And now they're just starting to get access to clones, which is, we've been discussing that in the CGF WeChat group. But that's more of a standard case where a game is really popular in China and people outside China don't know about it, or a game is really popular outside China and people in China either don't have access to it or don't have interest in it.
Yeah. Interesting.
So what else? As we start to wrap this up, you have any other games you've been playing recently?
I've been playing Hitman, the first season or whatever. Hitman 1, the, you know, episodic release they put out, what, maybe a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
It was a PS Plus title about a month back or something.
You have to find the creative ways to kill targets?
It's like a total sandbox, dude. There's so many different ways you can go about achieving your objectives for each stage. And it also rewards you for replaying stages. You go up in a ranking for each stage, which unlocks new items and opportunities to go about everything. So
they should make a Hitman for Peace.
Yeah. Oh, that would be really...
It could be done. Yeah. It could be done.
Yeah. There was one hit I had where I, knocked out a massage therapist, took on his clothes, and went up to massage my hit. I could just, you know, massage him to sleep and just let him take a nap and leave.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool that it's a sandbox. There's so many different ways you can do it.
Yeah, but of course I killed him. But in Hitman for Peace, you can just, you know, put on that tranquil music and let him go off to sweet slumber. But I've been doing that, and I'm still working on The Witness. It's long, dude, and it's hard. That's been pretty difficult for me, and I'm trying to focus on just those two games. Otherwise, I'll never get through them.
Yeah, I've just finished a bunch of games in the last 2 weeks or so. I finished Ape Out on Switch, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I finished... Gato Roboto, which was like a 1-bit NES. It's like a 1-bit NES Metroid game, essentially.
Cool.
Really fun. And two games which I've been playing for years now, which I finally finished, are Nuclear Throne and Downwell.
Yeah, big kudos on finishing those, man.
Yeah, yeah. I can't believe I finally finished them. These are some of my favorite roguelike games of all time, definitely. Yeah. And I just felt like, oh, they're so hard, I'll probably never finish them, but I really enjoy them anyway.
Kept coming back to it here and there, and then finally buckled, you know, into it and just cranked it out.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. You really got to buckle up for those two.
Yeah.
You know, for those two, you just got to repeatedly die, like, over and over and over.
Over and over. You got to get in that loop, which I think we were talking about, Nuclear Throne versus Gungeon, and Gungeon just is so immediately satisfying and has it in, you know, just has its hooks in you, and when you die, you're just like... Okay, I'll just...
You mean Nuclear Throne, yeah.
Nuclear Throne, yeah, not Gungeon. Gungeon's a little bit slower and methodical, so...
Yeah, yeah. All three of these fantastic games. Anybody listen to this? Downwell's really good. Originally a mobile game made by Maupin.
Yeah.
And also, I think 1-bit or 2-bit, I'm not sure how to describe it, but it's definitely like retro graphics. And it's a roguelike shooting game where you're dropping down a well with gun boots, and so it's like a vertically progressing shooting game,
yeah,
which is very unique. Very difficult also. It just probably took me, I would say, 10 hours of play over the last like couple of weeks to finish it.
Yeah, and you'd say maybe actually completing one run is, you know, maybe like 10, 15
yeah,
minutes?
Probably
or 15 something.
Minutes,
yeah,
something like that. I got a neat video. One of the things I love about Switch so much is you can take videos. Yeah. Just such an awesome, you know, simple functionality. And I got a great video at the end of the game.
Finishing.
Yeah, just the finishing move. So, so deeply satisfying.
Satisfying.
Yeah. And,
absolutely.
Nuclear Throne as well. So difficult, but really challenging. Really deep sense of satisfaction for finishing that one. So these roguelike games on Switch, man, just can't say enough great things about them.
I think the Switch is a perfect fit for games like that, too. I really need to upgrade my Switch and get into some of those games. So
yeah, hacked Switch. We got two podcasts on that subject. Yeah. Got to update your firmware.
For sure. All right. Well, wrapping up for this episode. If you would like to listen to previous episodes, you can check them out on whatever app you're listening to us on right now, or our website at chengdugaming.com. Thanks again for listening. Over and out.
Catch you next time.